This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Welcome to Off the Looking Glass. I'm Kate Fagan.
I'm Jessica Smetana.
It is the closing days of the World Cup, Jess, and at least the rest of the world has been going bonkers.
Thrived.
Over the game of football.
Yeah. Yes. It's been a yes. Great tournament for everyone except the U.S.
So kudos to them. I cannot wait to see who wins. But we have got to get back to our roots, Jess.
Ooh. What are our roots?
Yeah, and you know what they are. The basketball, the hooping. And we've got an amazing guest on today's show. I just recorded the hype intro for her, and I was like, damn, she has won a lot of different things. And she's doing really cool stuff in her post-playing career, not to mention her music, which we will drop samples of in this episode, Jess. But we have Angel McCautry.
Woohoo!
That's right. And we have a campfire, a really cool campfire for anyone who saw the movie Against the Ropes. A Meg Ryan vehicle back in the day, Jess. We have boxing legend Jackie Kellen, who represents fighters and is one of the first women to break into that industry. She's going to tell us some stories from inside the ropes.
Let's get to it.
Yeah, I'm from Baltimore. What up, legend? Legend. Our guest today is a two-time Olympic gold medalist with Team USA basketball. She's a five-time WNBA All-Star, seven-time selection to the WNBA All-Defensive First Team. She was the 2009 Rookie of the Year and a member of the WNBA's 25th anniversary team. She is also the founder of Legency Management, an all-female management company, and her EP, Student of the Game, is in NBA 2K. All right, let's do it. Let's bring her on, Angel McCautry. The way I sleep, I eat, I drink. I'm a legend. The way I score, the way I think. I'm a legend. When I say, is it legency, lagency? What am I emphasizing? Is it like legend, agency? How do I blend it?
Yeah, that's pretty much the blend. It's legency, legend and agency mixed.
I have spent years covering female athletes, so I'm like dealing with the people around female athletes. I've always been curious, like, okay, how many options are there? And then among those options, like, who is good at what? So kind of take me inside, like, your experience and then what led to thinking, you know, there's room in this space for me to do something different.
Yeah, I mean, I just think that, like, you know, we need to see more women players, NBA players doing different things, entrepreneurship, ownership, as we're seeing now, more than before. I remember when I first came to the league, you just didn't see it as often. I think more women are seeing the power and ownership and being an entrepreneur. So I definitely wanted to do different things just to see what I liked. You know, I believe in like trying different lanes per se.
You kind of hinted at it just now, but when you first came into the league, it was like a whole different world, it feels like. In terms of me even talking like to Simone Augustus, she'd be like, people would be saying less things because they were just like, we got to keep our league afloat, versus now where it feels like you can, whatever lane you want to occupy, there's a, like, you can try it. So can you articulate a little bit of like what you've seen changing?
Oh, I've seen so much change. It stems so deep. Like first it changed with women players speaking out about things in-house. The men can do it anytime they want.
Yeah.
They get praised for. But it was like women were always scared for their job to speak out on things that made, whether it was injustice in the workplace due to anything as far as racism, anything, especially Black athletes. It's just that fear, like, this is my job. We don't get paid that much anyway, right? So it's like, can't lose my job, can't speak up. I was always one of them ones that I didn't care. I was speaking up. You know, back then, I was the type, people was like, oh, well, you know, especially when a Black athlete speaks up and a Black woman, oh, she's a mad Black woman, she's a troublemaker, is this. It's like, no, I'm just speaking on things I see that may not be right. You know what I'm saying? So you had that, and then you just had, like, you know, you never wanted to overstep any boundaries as far as, like, you know, when you speak out about, like, hey, we may need to get more pay or this, that, and it's like, oh, we might be scared that our league may fold if we can speak out on that. If we can't afford a lockout, like, the men, because our league could fold. It was just, like, so many things that this you know, you had so many fears that people kept their mouth shut on a lot of things. But I was always one that I just was like, listen, you know. But now I think times have changed. You know what I mean? I remember one time I said, somehow TMZ caught me in New York and they were like, hey, ask me a question about league. I was like, you know, it would be nice. I would love to make as much in my country playing a sport than overseas. And then that blew up. And then all the girls were like, hit me on the group chat, like, yo, this is dope. Like, this is true. You know, they were supporting it. And I think I saw more people after that, just really just speaking out on different things, you know, the pay and the things like that. Of course, I got a lot of negative backlash.
Of
You will
course.
never get what the men get. You guys aren't gonna. I never compared us to the men. I never said we need to get what the men get. I never mentioned the men. It's just like people were so quick to compare us so fast. And it was like, I was just saying that simple fact that, you know, because I would get my WNBA salary more than my WNBA salary in 1 month overseas. It's like the value. You can't tell me that Sue Bird, Diana Taurasi, Candace Parker, they're valued less than a million with their brands alone. Come on. You know what I mean? So, yeah.
I remember I was talking like Megan Rapinoe at one point, and she's like, how can it be that like some Fortune 500 business will have me zoom in for an hour and I make more in that hour than I make in a season playing in the WSL? Like, there is something wrong with our business structure if I'm valued over here like a hundredfold what I'm valued over here. So it's nice to see that it's not evened out, but it's getting there.
It's getting there. And I think that's the main thing about it. Like, you know, obviously we have like sports bars now in Portland that just play women's sports. It's like the value is starting to be shown. And I think it has stemmed from us speaking out a little bit. Because when the WNBA first came out, there was this momentum and you had Sheryl Swoopes and Cynthia Cooper, they all had their shoes out and they were all in commercials. And then it was just like we had this dip of just, it was like the value had just gone down. It was like we didn't keep up. Now the value is going back up, but we want to keep it up. You know, another issue is that this, right? Like what Angel Reese said, oh, I'm not in a rush to go to the NBA. I'm making so much money in college. Okay, that's another issue. We can't have college players making more than pros. They're not going to be excited to come play in the pro. You know, if I'm making $2 million in college, I want to stay in college forever. Rookies make what? After taxes, 50,000. It's gone up to 70, but to taxes. I told you I was number one pick in 2009 and I was making 44 as a number one pick. 44. And tax what? I probably got 36 of it.
I mean, it's hard
Come
to
on.
even fathom that.
And that's the number one pick. You talking about people in the after like the first four, the number fifth pick, 6, 7 is not even getting that. It goes down after number one pick. So come on, like, come on.
So for you, I mean, I know a little bit that you've always been doing things outside of hoop. Always thought about things outside of hoop. That's not always the case, right? Like, you know, a lot of players who are like Diana will always be like, I'm all about ball. I mean, I don't know that I fully believe her, but like, you know, people will say that. What's it been like for you, even though you're always doing things outside of hoop? I would say that most people see you as a basketball player. Was that ever hard for you, or were you like, no, you know what, that's where I'm making my name and that's fine? Like, how did you do that when it came to your own identity about how you felt?
It was hard when I started to get other passions that I was serious about. Because it was like I had released a song back in 2011 and it was called Baby, I'm a Star.
Baby, I'm a star. Don't forget it. I'm gonna show you about commitment.
Everybody was like, oh, what are you doing? Why are you making music? You're a basketball player. Stay in your lane. It's like we're so one-track minded. And it's like now, okay, I'm glad I didn't listen because I have my first sync placement on the video game. One of my songs is in the 2K video
And
game.
I love it. It's so good. I was listening to it.
You get what I'm saying? It's like, you know, when you have these other passions, it's like the one track mind doesn't want to give you that. You know, it's just like, for example, I always like to use, like, let's say Will Smith. He was a rapper at first, right?
And all I could say to myself was, damn, this boy is smooth.
Okay, then now he's a renowned actor. It's like, it's okay for people to kind of find other passions. Why not?
People can't do something themselves. They want to tell you you can't do it.
You know what I mean? So I think it was hard in that aspect at first. I think, you know, people start to get used to it. And now they say, okay, she's an entrepreneur. She's getting into the movie scenes. She has an ice cream shop. Okay, Angel likes to do different things. But that comes with people knowing us. You know, it's like people know LeBron, but they never met him, right? But it's like, okay, LeBron can just do whatever he wants because we know him. We're cool with, you know, but it's like a WNBA player. They don't know us, so they don't know our interests and our hobbies or our stories. We all know LeBron's story, right? Where he's from, his background. They don't know our story. So it's kind of like they kind of got to get to know us over and over because they don't know WNBA players as well. And that's where I want the more storytelling in our league. I want them to get to know us better because when they get to know us better, the fan base will go up. Nobody will go to an NBA game if they don't know who they're watching.
Yeah.
If it's Phoenix versus Denver, they don't know who they're watching. It's just going to be like, okay, I'm here, but okay, who's that? That's what happens when they come to NBA games. It's like they know like one player on a team.
Yeah.
Right?
Barely.
Or yeah, barely. The max, like if you're going to go watch Vegas, you may know probably the starting five and the rest is like, who's this? Who's that? But everybody don't have as many stars as Vegas.
No, they don't.
Look at where we are without half the promotion or marketing as the men. And look where we're at.
Yep.
Market it like them. It will work.
Yeah. Imagine if people actually invested, because it's working with almost no investment. Yes.
Yes. So imagine like it will work. It will make money. Mm-hmm. We're doing this now without half of what the men have.
Yep.
And we're already still doing some amazing things. Imagine if you guys invested and got to know us and our stories were more out there and we're in more commercials. It will work.
Yeah. So when you started Legency, like who did you have in mind? Not a specific person, but like the model of like who you wanted to work with.
I would say first it started because I saw a lot of the girls were like, they wanted to do different things and they just didn't know how, or they didn't just have anybody pushing for them. Same thing I went through. I was like, I want to do so many things. I just didn't have that person really pushing as hard for me. And then I was like, you know, I want to work with top tier women athletes. Like, I mean, they don't even have to be top tier. I just want to work with women athletes and help them in different lanes. That, you know, if a the main place said, hey, Angel, I want to do music. Okay, come holler at Legency. We'll get you in some music stuff and hopefully we can help you get some placements, right? Or, if, you know, I'm getting to the movie stuff now. If a girl said, hey, Angel, I want to learn how to do production and we live in Atlanta. All right, let's put you with some of those contacts. It really was for that purpose, because I feel like, you know, as women, we got to connect the dots more, you know, and help each other in those lanes. That's what really the goal was, to help bridge that gap so these girls can have more of an opportunity outside of basketball and get into these rooms and have these conversations.
Yeah. What's it feel like? Because you were number one pick in 2009 and we're seeing the Angel Reese's, all of the college players we can name. We know they are going to be making good money from the changes that have happened that you fought for, that have just happened in college sports. Can you also benefit from this? Or do you feel like that's for them and your ability to maximize on certain things is maybe in the next generation? How do you weigh that?
It will benefit us when the brands start to tie in the legend players. So like, you know, for all the NIL deals that are going to Angel Reese, Flauge, tie in Simone Augustus with it. Tie in Sylvia Fowles with it, because they missed the mark of having NIL, which they would have capitalized just like that, right? Bring them back into it. Obviously, when Haley Van Leaf was in Louisville, she's like one of the top NIL. Tie in Angel McCarthy with her. She's a legend that they look up to that paved the way for them, right? So I feel like they tie these legends back into it, bring back Show Swoops. You know, why is NIL start with college? Let's bring the brands and tie in the legends with the college players. It could work.
You see anybody doing that? Because I feel like you're onto something.
I have not yet. Every college has that legend player that they can tie with one of the young superstars.
Yeah.
For NIL. And then you got something here. That's how they can capitalize.
Yeah.
Because they deserve it. Like, these legends deserve that.
Exactly. The brand would be doing a lot of like mythologizing that needs to be done so that you're not acting like Haley or Caitlin Clark are the first of their kind. You're like, no, we've been doing this. We've been doing this for a long time.
A long time. And I feel like, you know, even like Isla has like started, they went to the Final Four. You know, many people don't remember that.
Yeah, with C. Vivian Stringer, I think they went to the Final Four once. Yeah.
I know, I can't remember the star players. I have to go back and look it up. But whoever that star player was during that time, they helped them get that Final Four. Tyrone with Caitlin Clark. Yeah. Why are they done? I remember I did it once at Louisville. I did a commercial with Daryl Griffin. And it was a cute commercial. And he was like, hey, Angel, you want to see me put a quarter on top of the backboard? Because he used to jump that high.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I was like, you talking about this quarter? And I flicked it and he caught it. It was so cute, like little stuff like that.
I'm gonna look that commercial up. I hope it's on the internet.
I find that commercial. It was so dope with Daryl Griffin. So like they tied in the legend player, and I was like hot at the time. I was in my prime. I was the biggest thing smoking in Louisville. So they brought him back to do something with me because he was a legend. So I think that would work, man.
Yeah, this is a good idea. You gotta run with this. Yeah. I like it. I think I read, I don't know if it's accurate, you can confirm. Are you Paris 2024 still on your radar?
It is.
Okay, cool.
I've been working, man. I've been working on my game and continuing. I'm not on the team now, but hopefully, you know, it doesn't affect me. Because I did well at USA Basketball the last time I went, and I felt like I was up to par where I needed to be from injuries and stuff like that. So that's still on my radar. I'm going to keep manifesting,
yeah,
and I'm going to keep believing in it. Because if I do 24, that will be my last one.
Yeah.
And I would love to go out that way. That would be a nice way to go out.
That'd be awesome.
Instead of being injured.
What's your like, I have my own little philosophy about why we're at the moment we're at now. And by that, I just mean, like, women's sports are hot right now. And I think it's a lot of factors. Like, when you think about the last decade, what are the few things you point to that you think have led us to this moment?
Yeah, women's finally speaking out and speaking their mind. Us showing that we have power numbers. Like, we killed a 2020. Like, how we helped Warnock in his campaign. How we stuck together against social injustice and Black Lives Matter and different things like that, different initiatives. Like, we killed it. We came up with the idea first to put the phrase on the back of the jersey. Then the NBA followed our idea and stuff like that. Like, we've shown, like, hey, our voices are really heard. We know how to make a difference. Those are some of the differences I see. Like, just us really, really sticking together, speaking out, and doing it together. You know, when you do it together, it's more powerful than doing it individually.
Yeah.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
When you're looking at college hoops now, the transfer portal is both, like, amazing and also just blows my mind. Like, I'm like, how is college sports the way it is right now? Because it just was the one way for so long. When you look at it, are you like, I wish I had played in that time? Or are you like, I'm glad I wasn't playing during that time?
I don't want to change the time I came out because it was so beautiful.
Yeah.
I just want to change, like, how things are now to that time. That's the only things I would change, like, the structure now. To put in that time.
Yeah.
You know, because I didn't know that coaches could offer when they're recruiting you, like, say, hey, I can get you 80K to 100K NIL. I didn't know they can do that. I just found that out. He says, I'm like, okay. So I would love to have been recruited and be like, hey, I can get you. I mean, because every kid is broke. I mean, I was a star athlete in college, and I remember I spent all my money on rent and everything. I didn't have much left. I had to call my mom. I'm like, Mom,
yeah,
can you bring me a pizza? I'm hungry. I don't have any money left. And I'm a star athlete. And she had to order me a pizza because I was starving. I ran out of money. So that would have been great during that time.
Yeah. It's so fun. Like, I remember being like wanting to go see a movie in the theater and kind of wondering, does everybody have $7 to do that?
Yeah. The kids would never have to worry about that today. They're not going to have to call their mom to order the pizza,
no.
Which is great.
No, there's just very shiny Mercedes that I see. And I'm like, that's a very that's a nice looking car. Yeah. One thing I've been thinking a lot about and wanting to know, people who are so deep in it, when you look at the future of women's sports, it can feel like our only model is like, okay, what is the men, like, if we're 30 years behind the men, then I guess in 30 years, women's sports will look like men's sports. I don't know that that's the right idea, though. I mean, I would hope the WNBA and, like, the collective bargaining agreement, they'd be like, let's do things differently, whatever that means, right? Like, whether it means having more childcare, right? Having more paid leave, just whatever women might want that is different than men. So the broad question is, like, when you think about the future of women's sports, like, what's your kind of, and working in it, what's your vision for it?
My vision, I definitely see, like, you know, how women's tennis did it. You know, they grew it really, really well to the point where now it's like, it's a big deal.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? See that for women's basketball. I also see that in 25 years, we are farther along than the NBA was in 25 years. So I do see a lot of growth. I said this 10 years ago in a lot of interviews. I said, men's basketball is pretty set. The beauty of women's basketball is like evolution. You ever see that evolution chart? I like women's basketball. More women. I said 10 years from now, more women are going to be dunking than ever before, and that's happening. Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking another 10 years. I mean, just going to be just some amazing things to see. The only thing that hurts women's basketball. You watch tennis. You know the men hit the ball harder, but you don't really notice the significant difference. In soccer, the men kick it harder, but you don't really see the significant difference. You know the men swim faster, but you don't really see the significant difference. And when you watch LeBron jump vertically,
yeah,
and you watch a woman jump vertically, there's such a big difference to compare in any other sport, men and women, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does.
So it's like when you compare how hard Serena hits to Roger Federer, you don't really see, you just know he does.
Yeah.
But you see it like, oh, something miles per hour, but you just don't really see it. You see it in basketball, how high they get compared to us. That's the only thing that hurts basketball compared to any other sport.
Mm-hmm.
The vertical. That's the only thing. So if there's a way where we can continue to be more athletic and more things like that, that is really going to help us.
Yeah.
Because you can see the vertical difference in our sport than any other sport.
Yeah. No, it's a good point.
Never thought about it like that.
Well, the way I've always thought about it is how in football you have a helmet on. You can't see them. And basketball is so personal. But you just articulated what is so personal about it also is the physical manifestation of the athlete. But sometimes people who haven't watched the NBA in a while tuned into the NBA playoffs and they're like, oh my God, the NBA players are so big. They're almost too big now. It's almost like they have to soften a layup when they do it because they're so much bigger than the game was 30, 40 years ago. So maybe women will be the perfect size and athleticism in 10 years and the men will just keep evolving beyond.
Yeah, but here's the beauty of everything that just happened with the Final Four. Everybody was more interested in the women's Final Four than the men's Final Four this year. This was the first time I've ever seen it.
Yeah.
So many people were like, well, the men's Final Four, eh?
Yep.
The women's, though. I was like, whoa, this
Everywhere.
Is big.
Yep.
Right? It was more interesting to watch the women this year than the men. It was like, that is big. And it was the first time that ever happened. I was like, mm-hmm. And we all felt that. The women's was more, kind of almost exciting. More exciting.
Yes. Well, Angel, thank you so much for your time. I always love talking to you. You're so fun and easy to talk to. So thank you.
Appreciate that.
You know, while you're living your life, you're so busy doing what you're doing, getting up every day, running here, running there. You don't really think about it as fodder for a movie or a book. But then when you look back on it, you just start to see it as more of a story that people might be interested in. And I've just been blessed to be surrounded by iconic people like Elvis and the Rolling Stones and Muhammad Ali and Michael Jackson and Frank Sinatra, you know. When you look back on it, it's like, wow, you know, I did that or I met this one. But at the time that you're living it, you don't think about it like a movie plot. It's been a long, interesting journey for me. Just a small town, Detroit, which isn't really a small town, but where I lived in the area was just everybody knew everybody, Jewish community, just an average kid. Discovered that I could write at a very young age, started winning contests, went right into journalism in high school, started interviewing people quite young for a local paper, moved to New York when I was 19, wrote for a paper there, did some amazing interviews, came back, got married, had a couple kids, worked for a paper here, mostly covered entertainment, went to the Oscars, the Emmys, the Tonys, you know, all those awards. And then in the 70s, added sports writing to my resume. And boxing became a sport that I covered. So I fell into the boxing world. No women were doing it. So it was like, wow, this is very interesting. And I got involved as a boxing writer, then a boxing publicist, then a boxing manager, and later on a promoter as well. And I found an interesting niche for myself. It was an easy jump from a reporter to a publicist. Going into management was a little different because taking over someone's career, it took a little bit of a learning curve. Eventually, I learned. I mean, I was in the boxing business for 10 years before I even attempted to manage. And now I've been managing for 35 years. So something that you learn as you go. I was fascinated by the sport because it's almost like a ballet. It's the way these guys move and the timing it took, not to mention the mental acuity to make the right move at the right time. I was really taken by the scientific side of the sport. And it's one-on-one. It's not like, you know, you're on a team, like a football team or anything. It's just you climbing through those ropes and facing someone who's ready to take your head off. And you have to be clever enough to be defensive and offensive at the same time. And I was fascinated at the way that they appeared to hate each other, and then they'd be done with the fight and they'd hug each other and it was over. You know, if only the whole world could be that simple, where you could go to war and then when it's over, hug it out. I found aspects of the sport that appealed to me and that I could relate to. And it's more than just arranging the fights and going over the contracts. It's picking the right opponent at the right time, because you don't want to put your fighter in with someone too much better too soon, because he's liable to get beat. But you again don't want to put him in with stiffs all the time, so he keeps winning but he isn't beating anybody of quality. Then he thinks he's better than he is. So it's psychologically challenging to make the right moves at the right time. And then it takes a bit of a therapist in a way to understand the psychology behind your boxer. Some guys think they're fabulous and they're just not that good yet. You have to kind of talk them down. And other guys have a little bit of a lack of confidence. They're excellent fighters, but they don't know how good they are. So you have to build their confidence to make them feel that they're as good as they actually are. There were some fighters that said, oh my God, I'm not having a girl manage me. Oh my God, how embarrassing. And then there were others that said, look at how motherly and kind and look how nurturing she is. You know, I want a manager like that, that comes to the gym every day and brings me things and buys me outfits. And, you know, I spoiled my fighters. You know, I was like mama hen to them. And I was just there for them to listen to their problems. They had issues with their wives and girlfriends or whatever. I was there to help sort it out. And I was as much of a sounding board as I was a manager. So it became a plus. And then other fighters started coming to me saying, well, I see what you're doing for Bobby or for Kenny, and can you do that for me? And all of a sudden I became in demand. Instead of being shunned, it was like a cool thing to have a woman manager. So it was a little of both, but eventually it all swung to the positive side, where they were kind of seeking me out. There were no other women that I could talk to about it at the time and say, well, what did you do when this guy hit on you? Or what did you do when, you know, certain things happened? And so I just had to kind of figure it out. And I did. And I found humor worked a lot, you know, just a way of avoiding conflict. And I also learned not to burn any bridges, because you'd have to work with these same people down the line. So you didn't really want to cut anybody off, and you didn't really want to, you know, act offended. You just wanted to skirt the issue with as much class as you could and just move forward. And then they did the movie. Well, it's about as inaccurate as you can get as far as the details. That's what Hollywood does. You know, they say, oh, we love your story, a married woman raising kids, dealing with your husband and having all these fighters living in your house. Oh, what a conflict. Oh, how great. Then they buy the story and they went, no, you don't need a husband. We don't need to cast. Oh, wait, kids? You don't need kids. I think you should be single. Oh, you're from Detroit? No, we'll make you from Cleveland. By the time the movie came out, it was like, huh? Who is that person? She has blonde hair and she's got a lot of balls, but that's not me. They changed the story. And Meg Ryan, who's America's sweetheart at the time, you know, that little cutesy Tom Hanks girlfriend kind of thing. That isn't me, but that's who they chose. And it was like, live with it. You know, that's who's going to play you. And I mean, the movie as a whole was cute. It shows you can break through the glass ceiling. You can do whatever you want. But anyone that knows me just walked out of the theater and said, who was that?
Hello, Off the Looking Glass fans. It's me, Connie Kubert-Culkin, and I'm back with another strange but true moment in women's sports. We all remember when Carrie Strug landed her vault in the 1996 Atlanta Olympics. What the media wanted you to focus on was her ankle injury.
She is hurt badly.
If you scramble all the letters in Carrie Allison Strug, you get an ominous, sorry ankle, girl, sit. But what I am here to open your eyes to is the fact that the girl's future was out of her control the minute her foot hit the runway. The score the judges gave her that day was 9.712, 9712, a.k.a. September 7th, 1912, the birthday of electrical engineer David Packard. David passed away just 4 months before Carrie competed in the Atlanta Olympics. David is the co-founder of Hewlett-Packard, or HP for short. They're famous now for making printers. I know for a fact that the spirit of David Packard entered Carrie Strug's body that day. It is the only possible explanation for Carrie's career choices post-Olympics. Before HP made printers, their first product was an audio frequency oscillator, and 8 of them were sold to Walt Disney Studios for sound tests for Fantasia. After retiring from gymnastics, Carrie skated for World of Disney on Ice. David Packard attended Stanford University in 1934, and Carrie transferred to and graduated from Stanford in 2001. During the Nixon administration, David was the U.S. Deputy Secretary of Defense, and in 2005, Carrie was a presidential appointee in the DOJ under President George W. Bush. It all seems a little too coincidental that a nice girl from Tucson, Arizona, with a promising athletic career, would live a life resembling that of a dead billionaire man. I'm convinced he just wanted a do-over, and he's using poor Carrie to get it. If you're picking up what I'm putting down, please listen, like, and subscribe to Conspiracy Theory, your place for all things conspiracy in women's sports. Now back to your program.
All right, well, we're breaking news here on Off the Looking Glass, yeah. Jess, because what we've just revealed is that apparently Hollywood, when it gets hold of a true story, sometimes dramatizes it beyond recognition. I mean, who knew?
I certainly have not heard that for decades about the film Rudy, Kate. Mm. But you know what? Mm. If Hollywood's going to dramatize anything, it's as long as it's not dramatizing a Clint Eastwood script about boxing called Million Dollar Baby, because... If you can recall, back a year ago, Kate, still probably, if we had to rate the movies we watched, one of our least favorites.
Yeah, yeah, it still sticks in our craw, so to speak. Jess, so Rudy wasn't verbatim?
No, Rudy it wasn't was highly dramatized, based on a true story. But, you know, that's okay, because if it was supposed to be totally true, it would have been a documentary, and it wasn't. It was a Disney movie.
Yeah. And it certainly added to the luster of your Notre Dame football lore.
My alma mater.
The tale of Rudy.
Yeah.
Yeah, your alma mater. All right, Jess, that'll do it for Off the Looking Glass this week. Do you want to tell people who makes this excellent show?
Thanks to you, Kate, for producing and co-hosting Off the Looking Glass, and to Anya Alvarez, our producer, for helping us put everything together.
Carl Scott is the executive producer of Off the Looking Glass, and Joel Shupak is our sound designer. And of course, big thank you to Angel McCautry. You can check out her management company, Legency, and also Jackie Kellen for stopping by the pod.
We'll see you next week.
Bye.